This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey's effort to try to stop the repeal of net neutrality appears to be gaining support, even on the other side of the political aisle. Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins says she will support Markey's bill, which now has enough co-sponsors for a floor vote. Last month, the Federal Communications Commission voted along party lines to deregulate internet providers and remove Obama-era rules that require internet providers to treat all web traffic equally. We spoke with Markey a little earlier today while he was in Washington, D.C., and we began with how close he is to getting a vote on a net neutrality bill.
We need 30 members of the Senate to sign on as co-sponsors of the resolution. And we've passed that, and we're up to 44 now. Senator Collins from Maine has basically made it clear that she is going to be a supporter of the effort to repeal what the Federal Communications Commission did and to keep the net neutrality rules on the books.
Aside from Senator Collins, do you have other GOP senators ready to support the legislation?
Thus far, there are no other Republicans who have announced, but if every Democrat supports net neutrality plus Susan Collins, that puts us at 50, and we only have to get to 51. But it's pretty clear that momentum is building, that there is a phenomenal grassroots movement out there. Millennials are energized. And I'm increasingly becoming optimistic that this is turning from a technology issue into a political issue, and that members of the Senate are going to understand that there's a political price to pay if they do not support net neutrality, if they allow for those rules to be taken off the books. So I think as every day goes by, the momentum has built dramatically.
You know, even if it does pass the Senate, though, it's at least written that it would face an uphill battle in the House and a potential presidential veto. So, you know, why do this?
Well, I'm not so sure that it's a guarantee that it can't also succeed in the House of Representatives. 83% of all Americans support net neutrality. I do think that there's going to be an uprising across the country. I mean, 23 million Americans communicated with the FCC telling them not to change the net neutrality rules, and the FCC did it anyway. There's never been at any time at any agency in American history that kind of an outpouring of American voices on an individual issue. And here's the important thing. Last year, 50% of all venture capital in America went to web or internet-specific companies, meaning that the venture capital industry in the United States was saying, hey, these startups, these new companies, they can gain easy access to that national and international marketplace. Meanwhile, the big companies, the broadband companies, invested $87 billion in capital expenditures in 2015. So what you have is a nice balance. It's a sweet spot. Investment in broadband and wireless technologies is high. Job creation is high. Venture capital investment in online startups is high. It's perfect. It's a perfect balance.
So basically the system is working fine. Leave it alone.
It is a perfect sweet spot. And we in Massachusetts are especially vulnerable because our kind of entrepreneurial ecosystem is based around smaller internet startups being able to gain access in a non-discriminatory way to the web and get the product out there. And without net neutrality, they will never reach their audience, never reach their customers. And that's why it's such a huge issue for our economy in Massachusetts.
I want to ask you about immigration. The president appears now willing to maybe make some compromises if broader immigration reform is on the table. You surprised by that?
It's always hard to know what the president means when he is nodding his head or agreeing on something. So as we now discuss this issue with the president, we just have to make sure that he will write down and ensure that it is clear what the DACA, what the immigrant community gets, because he has now broadened it out to all 11 million people. And if that's the case, then that's a good discussion for us to have. But under no circumstances are the Democrats going to be voting for $18 billion for a wall when we know that it is drones.
Well, we should explain that a little bit, because that was a tweet from the president yesterday where he said our country needs the security of the wall on the southern border, which must be part of any DACA approval. What do you say to that? Do you think, is there any kind of compromise there where some funding for the president's wall proposal might have to be included if immigration reform were to go through?
Well, I think the Democrats are open to new technologies being used along the border. The president's already retreating from having a wall across the totality of the southern border, saying that technologies could be used in many areas, hundreds and hundreds of miles. So I think there's a new area here which is now open for discussion, and it is something that we are going to have to pursue very aggressively. But under no circumstances are the Democrats going to vote for the $18 billion for a wall.
Hmm. And finally, I want to ask you about the elections later this year. We have a new WBUR poll out today of Massachusetts voters, and that poll suggests 29% approve of the job that the president is doing. What do you think that means for congressional Democrats that are up for re-election here?
Well, I don't think that people in Massachusetts, with a president at 29% favorability in Massachusetts, are going to be wanting to send another Republican member of Congress down to Washington to give a vote for the policies of a president who is only viewed at 29% favorability. So that's not good news at all for Republicans in Massachusetts.
You know, on the state level, we've got a very popular Republican governor here in Charlie Baker. Three-quarters of the respondents in this poll approve of the job that he's doing, and more than 60% of the respondents could not identify any of the Democratic challengers. Bob Massey, Seti Warren, Jay Gonzalez, all saying that they're going to challenge Governor Baker. I mean, so what do you make of that split there?
I think, on the one hand, the Democratic Party has yet to select a candidate, and so we have three good candidates who are out there and whose name recognition is going to rise as each week and month goes by, and they will become very well known before we hit Election Day. So we just turn the corner, and it's a week after New Year's Day, so that's very early in this process. But ultimately, I think what it says is that the Democratic Party has work to do.
How would you rate Governor Baker's job performance so far?
Well, you know, I work with him on opioids, and I work with him on even a couple of years ago when we had those huge snowstorms. I went into the White House with him to get that massive amount of money that came up to Massachusetts in order to help with the snow removal budgets. So on many issues, I'm able to work with him.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask you this, probably our last question here, about Oprah and the chatter about a possible 2020 run for president. What do you make of that, of a potential Oprah run for president?
My view of Oprah running for president is that there is clearly now a new era where people want desperately to almost select our nominee now for 2020. This is as you're just asking me to speculate on 2018 elections with a degree of uncertainty that still exists in 2018, much less jumping all the way to 2020. So I think there's a certain kind of desire on the part of people just to be able to sit around and speculate about 2020, but it first begins with Oprah deciding that she wants to run. And so it does mean that to some extent the rules are changing, and people, because of Donald Trump being a television personality, that people can look at other people who aren't part of the traditional political firmament and begin to, you know, speculate as to their viability as candidates. in past years, Ed Muskie was unbeatable as a Democrat this far out in 1970 for the 72 election. Mario Cuomo, the Mario scenario, he was unbeatable in 1990. No one even heard of Bill Clinton. You know, at this point, Barack Obama had just was 1 year in as a United States senator, and Hillary could not be beaten. So it's fun to talk about, but sometimes it just can become speculation on steroids when the focus should be on the 2018 election cycle. It should be on the razor blade sharp issues, you know, on the Affordable Care Act, on climate, on energy, on net neutrality, on a giveaway of $1.5 trillion in tax breaks to the wealthiest corporations and individuals in our country. That is what we first have to put up on the agenda for the American people to decide. And if we're victorious, if we win the Senate and the House in 2018, the dynamic, the momentum heading towards 2020 is going to be overwhelming.
And now I know it's early, but you think that's likely?
I think it's very possible. When a president's at 29% favorability in Massachusetts, probably means he's not over 40 in favorability in most of the states in the union where we have to win the seats to take over the majority.
All right. Well, Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey, thanks so much for being with us today.
No, thank you for having me.